You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100, and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the don't nearly view system deal. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social. It's John Gibbons and Neil Atkinson, and this is a little audio ad, a little sneak behind the paywall and the things that we're putting out every day on the Anfield Wrap across audio and video, which are primarily focused obviously on Liverpool football games and Liverpool football events, and we look at each game in great detail, including the review show that we're going to show a little advert for now. You talk about games we play a lot, Neil, probably more than anyone here at the Anfield Wrap.
Possible than anyone on the planet.
Well, yeah. And
pound for pound.
So you do a lot for us. And then today you've decided to add, because you're a masochist, you did Radio 5 Live really early.
6:20.
Yeah, it was definitely before I was up. And LFC press box as well. You've really assessed this game.
You commit to these things. You know, you say yes before the game's been played. And this is a really important detail because I'd have done almost everything humanly possible to have got out of them. But then you don't want to be the person that lets the side down.
So only like cowards that. And gutmen pull out.
Yeah, I sadly don't have the multi children excuse.
It takes it in turns with them, doesn't it?
Yeah, very much. So no, I'm left trying to sort of get through it. And then you know what you can do is then sort of say, well, this is what you saw within the game. I think it's difficult at the minute because I think that there's a couple of macro issues with Liverpool, and you want to talk about the macro issues, but there's also issues that are both sort of around a game, and that's not quite a micro issue because there's then also issues that are around either a specific player or a few minutes within a game. And I think currently there's, and I don't, by the way, blame people. People can want to talk about whatever they want to talk about, but I think there's a real desire to talk about the macro all the time. And I understand that, but, you know, to give a really good micro example, it is not in no way, shape or form, to go all the way back to the Arsenal away game, it is in no way, shape or form anything to do with John Henry, Michael Edwards, Mike Gordon, even Jurgen Klopp in a sense, although Jurgen Klopp does bear a bit more responsibility, that Thiago Alcantara carries the ball into his own penalty area 2-2, doing effectively keepy-ups on the run. That's not, you know, and I think that at times you just want to sort of, you've got to work out what bit you want to talk about when. So I think at the minute, I think that obviously there's understandable desire for people to want to talk about, as I say, I think I understand it, that there's a bigger picture question. But you know, for me, one of the things about that game yesterday is that Liverpool have got options that, and they use those options as the game wears on, that are perfectly available to start that game at the expense of others. And within the context of that as well, that's happened all the way through the season. I think that there's been a real sort of risk aversion around starting certain players, and then those players have ended up coming off the bench anyway. So you're a bit like, well, you may as well just, especially at half-time, you might as well just start them and done the first 45 at the very least and gone from there. And I understand, again, why that is from the manager's point of view, because he's lived through the reality of feeling like injury crises are spiralling whilst he's at Liverpool and whilst he's been at other clubs. And then that can then pull you back to having a macro conversation, or that continuing into a micro conversation. And I think that all the conversations do sort of need to be had. I find I'd rather be in the tooth of the, you know, there's a gutter show coming out tomorrow. I think that, you know, we can always work other shows in to talk about other little bits and pieces. There's no game next week, midweek, which helps. But I think that at the minute, I feel as though there's still be more room, I think, for the micro conversation than the macro one. Which, as I say, a lot of people sort of disagree with me about, but at the minute I think there's a few people at the football club, on and off the pitch, on the technical staff, who just don't think are having that good a season. And I think that'll need to change if we're going to fulfil any ambition ever, despite what's going on in the macro, if that sort of makes sense.
No, it makes complete sense, and you know, we could talk about, you know, midfield and what Liverpool have and haven't done, largely haven't, in the transfer market sort of over the past few years. But if it still doesn't get away from the fact that individuals on the football pitch are making really strange decisions. And, you know, you could make an argument as well that individuals in the management box are making really strange decisions and sort of why they're, what they're doing and maybe trying to figure out why that they're doing it is just, if not more interesting to me than, well, who Liverpool are going to buy in January. Yeah,
but also I think that that's also part of the macro. So I'm probably going to write something. I've written, just came down here. I was late to come down and do this with you. I've just finished my rundown today and it's sort of going into the micro. I think there's a really interesting conversation to be had at some point about what Liverpool thought they were going to come up against this season. Because I think they make a lot of decisions where I think they feel it's the way sides have approached them isn't going to change. And if anything, it's going to become even more pronounced around the idea of sides just spending the whole of 90 minutes sitting really, really deep, especially at Anfield. And I think that they've sort of got themselves into a bit of a position where they feel they need to equip in that general direction. And actually what's happened is that more clubs have brought the fight to Liverpool over the course of the season. And right now, the idea of a genuine, whether you, again, without it being about specific personnel, but a genuine sort of Kloppish midfield from 17 to the signing of Thiago would really appeal from what we're coming up against sort of week in, week out, because games are becoming really quite brutal and slogs at times, and there's a lot of aggression, there's a lot of energy that we're coming up against. And we know Jurgen Klopp likes that sort of thing, not least because he's done it once. But Liverpool have gone out of the way across, not just, and including moving into the transfer market with players like Thiago, as an example, have gone out of the way, I think, to act and to recruit and to set up and to progress a team and a squad in a way that they feel as though the job is much more about breaking down packed defences. And they've moved in that general direction up to and including, I think, getting closer and closer, at least for the first part of this season. And if we remember pre-Elliott injury last season, to something that looks a lot at times like 4-2-4. And they've made those... So rather than simply act as though it is something that is solely to do with the transfer market, I think it's interesting to think, what are the chains of events that have made Liverpool go, well, what about this? On top of that, then, you can say, you know, for instance, is there a conversation around whether or not ultimately the philosophy of we will only invest into the football club what it earns, whether or not that's sustainable in a post-Chelsea, under this new mad fella, post-Newcastle, reality of Manchester City, ongoing Manchester United framework, especially when you're then dealing with a resurgent Arsenal and a Tottenham who borrowed a shitload of money in order to get back into the Champions League places, which, by the way, currently isn't being discussed by anyone. But I really have, like, I think Tottenham are very unlikely to get back in the Champions League places this season. So there's a massive Levy/Tottenham ownership question, which is, well, what's your next move? Because at some point that money's got to be paid back, and you've done this for a reason. And if anything, you could end the season looking even further away. All of that's in there, and I think that you can have those sorts of bits of conversation, and I think that they are interesting. But then simultaneously, even around that, the one thing that we do know vis-a-vis the ownership across the last 3-4 months is that they're looking for investment/a sale. So I'm not quite sure what our next move is around that in terms of therefore looking at the rest of the side. I think everyone's just sort of, I include the ownership in this, by the way, but I very much include the management team. I think everyone's just sort of painted themselves into a bit of a funny corner at the minute, and it's exceptionally difficult to paint the way out without effectively saying we might have fucked up for 2 years, like going back to literally signing Thiago. And we all love Thiago, and we've all loved watching him, but it's possible that the stripped back bit of this is, you know, when we went and bought the best available midfielder, who was the best one, who we put on our joint highest wage when we signed him, that might have been the wrong move. And I think that's a really difficult direction of travel to suddenly go, Christ, let's reverse back out of that. And I think that's part of what you're sort of seeing on the pitch at the moment. And I think that's something which, again, I'm probably going to write about this in the next couple of days, and there'll be shows here and there. But I think that's something which it doesn't have to call anyone into question, to be really, really clear, and that it doesn't have to be. I think that often people feel as though there's got to be some sort of big terminal, well, that's, everything's got to change here, and that's the case. But I do think it does sort of throw up you did see the direction of travel as being like this, either in the short, medium, or long term, and it transpires the direction of travel hasn't been like this, what on earth is our next move? Because we very much built the railway this direction. And now it appears that the railway that we built in this direction was the wrong way to send the railway. How do we pick those rails back up?
Yeah. The review, it's every, when you do it and afterwards, you know, do you, you know, how do you feel about sort of what you've discussed? Does it make you feel better? Is it therapeutic? You know, do you learn stuff from the others? You know, how do you come out of a review?
Yeah, I like the back and forth, and I actually at times sort of feel a bit like I'm working stuff out as I'm going a little bit, and that's nice. Not like in any sort of definitive way, because none of this is definitive, and also what I think doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. But like sort of hearing from Sean, now Sean might say something, and I think, yeah, that actually sparks me off to say, and maybe that we end up here, or that we've wanted to end up here, or that this is what they're trying to do. Because I think the most important thing is just to try to think about what they're trying to do. And I think, and where this conversation is all a little bit difficult at the minute, is I think there's people, I think we have to, and I genuinely think we do have to, and there's loads of reasons why, we have to presume that they're doing what they're trying to do, firstly, from a position of good faith. That everyone who's involved at the football club wants to see the football club win every single game, yeah, and is committed to that. If you don't think that, then that's sort of, you can make an argument, but if you end up in that place, then fucking hell, it's nihilistic. So, you know, you've got to be really, really careful ending up in that space. If you are there, there's almost no way back. And I'd almost go to the point of saying there's not actually a lot of way back in modern football, full stop, for you, if that's where you end up. So if you end up there, then you've got to start from the position of, okay, well, what's the why? And what I really like about doing review is getting into that why. And then I think some of the time we will almost definitely draw absolutely the wrong conclusion. And every now and again, I think, fucking hell, if the manager could hear this, he would think we were absolute bellends. And I'm all right with that, you know, because not least because if you take yourself too seriously, don't do this job and get up at 6:20 in the morning and talk to Five Live. You've got to, you know, you've got to sort of be prepared to come across like a Wally some of the time. And that's, I'm sort of, you know, I'm committed to that long term. and you've got to work that bit out. So yeah, I do enjoy doing it. I do enjoy the thinking about it. I like the WhatsApp group. As a man who doesn't like WhatsApp groups, I like the WhatsApp group. And I like the sort of the bits and pieces that come up in there. I think you've got to be careful not to end up with a hobby horse. And I'm just sort of a little bit concerned about me at the minute around the size of Liverpool's team in general and a couple of individuals in particular, not least because I don't want to be a meanie. That's not what I'm in this for in any way, shape or form. And footballers can't change certain things. But I think that it is something that I am genuinely concerned about when I see a certain team sheet or something like that. So you've got to ensure you don't get sort of stuck hammering something, I think, over and over again. But I do find it really, really good to do. I hope people do enjoy listening to it. The feedback's always, not always, but it's mostly really, really positive. And I know that Dan and Sean get a lot out of it as well. And today we were joined by Harriet too, which was good. I think it's good for other people to come and have a go at it every now and again. I know some people don't like to, or some people just prefer to listen to it really than come on it, which is also nice to think about. But yeah, I think it's a good show. And I think it's, as I say, it's not got all the answers. I'd like to think it's asking 80% of the right questions. I might have 60% of the right answers. And if that's the case, then we're doing okay.
Just a shout to Dan before we go. I think he's done an excellent job on it. He's very thorough. We're lucky, really. We've got a number of hosts who take their role of hosting the shows that you do much more seriously than you and I.
It certainly feels like that at times, and it does concern me massively. Like
you mentioned there that Harriet did the show today, and she messaged me saying she was overwhelmed by the number of screenshots that Dan had sent her.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, wow. I know, for example, Ian Ryan, you know, We'll send a detailed agenda. Well, you know, Mo works really, really hard.
Amelia.
On his agendas. Yeah, Amelia's obsessed with the wild cards.
Watches that vote like she got Peter Snow with the swingometer all the way through.
She lets me know exactly when her lunch break is, when she's going to be preparing for this. So when the polls need to be done by, and things like that. And you know, there's a number of them we're very fortunate to have, really, in terms of, you know, how much of their self they give to just one of our many shows.
Yeah, no, I think that's firstly, it's a great point. It's a really good point. The other aspect of that as well is the thing that you're always looking for from people, I think, on shows is that they be themselves, they give their authentic selves, they give their authentic opinions, and they find a way to be themselves plus 10%. And it's the plus 10% bit that people really, you know, do sort of have to, at times, dig deep a little bit on. You know, you don't know what's going on in the rest of people's lives. I mean, we're pretty friendly with a lot of the people you've just named, so we do get to find that out. But we don't know everything, and you don't know where. So for some people, I think it's a good escape. For others, there might be days where this does feel like, oh, I've got to do this because I said I would. All of that. I think that that's all perfect. And if any of them are listening to this as well, by the way, let me be clear. I think that's a really valid thing to think and feel at times. But people do. They find a way to sort of to pick that up and to give that extra 10%. And firstly, it's good to have the opportunity to let people show that extra 10% to themselves. Like, I think that is it's something that we're lucky to be able to do and offer to all of our sort of contributors. But those who, when you are hosting, you are responsible for creating that space for those other people too. And you've got to think more about that, and you've got to allow that sort of pathway through. And everyone you've just named there, you know, does come on and host stuff with us, is good at that, and is good at finding that, and is generous. And I think that the generosity is almost the most important thing as a host. I think the preparation's obviously brilliant, but being generous, finding that little space, encouraging people and some people at times, especially for instance for Amelia on Wildcards, you know, often Wildcards is someone's second or third show or something like that. So having the ability to sort of to make it as smooth as possible for people, I think really helps. And I think Dan with Review, you know, he gives a lot of room for me and Sean to be able to just sort of knock ideas backwards and forwards times. And I think that that's a real skill, and it's the sort of thing that if you're listening to it, you might think Dan hasn't spoken for 8 minutes, but if Dan hasn't spoken for 8 minutes, he's doing his job brilliantly.
Yeah,
and that's the trick, and that's where it's good, and that's where it all works.
Hope you found that interesting. That is a build-up to a section of the review. As I say, this is done after every game. I really enjoy listening to them. I'm one of those people, Neil mentions before, who would much rather listen than be on it. But I do listen every time and do learn a lot and feel good about wins and slightly better about defeats as well.
Not so, this one, John.
Well, yeah. We're never again. Will I feel the same? But yeah, so here's a little clip from that. Thanks to Harriet for putting the clip together. And so you're going to hear a clip from the review now. As I say, if you do want more, make sure you download the Anfield Rap app for loads more of this. Thanks very much, up to it.
Just on the general sort of Brentford, what's Brentford, the Brentford questions, and that you originally asked, for me it's fascinating to look at who they beat this season, who they haven't beat. They've played 18 games now. They've gone to City and won, and with a better side and deserve to win. They beat Man United 4-0. They got a 2-2 draw with Tottenham, a 0-0 with Chelsea, the Beatles 3-1. They beat Brighton 2-0, who I would say are one of the best sort of 7 or 8 footballing teams in the division. They beat Leeds United 5-2 against Leeds United, absolutely walloped them. And you can imagine what that game looks like in terms of being able to boil football matches down into moments. The other side they're beating, who are in the bottom half, is West Ham, who are currently an underperforming side with some good players. And then you look at who they haven't beat. So they should beat Tottenham, I said before. Put Arsenal to one side, but they've gone to St James's Park and got walloped 5-1. And you can imagine how that happens, given the way in which Newcastle are doing what they do this season. They've got beat at Fulham. They've found themselves in a situation where they've drawn 1-1 with Palace, got walloped 4-0 by Villa, failed to beat a shite Leicester at the moment they played them 2-2. They've gone 0-0 at Bournemouth, a 1-1 against Everton at home. Everton are absolutely dreadful. A 2-2 away at Nottingham Forest and a 1-1 against Wolverhampton Wanderers. You can just see what works for them. So, and you can see how they've nailed what works for them in terms of Sean's points about being able to grab minutes, being able to grab territory, being able to say to a side that's got any pretensions around being progressive for extended periods, that we're going to find a way to turn you round. And it wouldn't surprise me if in the second half of the season, a lot of those results, certainly the positive ones, are sort of flipped where everyone's got the video to an extent, or maybe they're just playing them at home. But that's what they've sort of reduced it to. And the other thing that's in all of these games, and this is my great frustration, and you said we'll come back to the selections, the other thing that's in all of these games where I've just said they do well, they score first. And I feel as though they're quite happy to throw dice a little bit on the idea, especially against better sides, in inverted commas, that if we score first, the very thing that's helped us score first, you will be poorer and poorer at, and we'll get more and more opportunity from, and then we'll get another one. You know, they could have walloped City, and a lot of those other victories I'm talking about there, they're by more than one goal. It's not hanging on for dear life territory. And that to me says there's a side that's got a really, really clear game plan. And then if the game breaks a certain way, i.e. where the first goal goes, then it suits them absolutely down to the ground. And what they've shown quality at being able to do, they're just going to get to show more and more and more and more quality at as the game wears on.
We'll come back around to selections, Harriet. Something happened against Villa, which we hadn't seen too much of before, but it's happened now twice in three games, whereby Villa stick John McGinn high, right, wide, and ask a question of Robertson of what he's going to do. And Andy Robertson says, that's absolutely fine. I'm going to bank that I can bomb on. I'm going to bank that the switches can get off to me. And I'm going to bank that at some point you're going to have to turn around and deal with me and not the other way around. And that's what happens in that game. Last night, Brentford do the exact same thing. And when you look at the game from last season, they are all left side. They are all down our right, all down Trent's side. Last night's not the case. They push Roosevelt, the wing back, right up onto Tsimikas. They get Mbeumo and
Jensen from midfield.
Yeah, you get both forwards coming over, playing in that space, in that pocket. They ask the same question, and we're not able to deal with it because we haven't got the first choice fullback in there. This game is a bank of three. Is part of a bank of three, and the thing that really fascinates me is why, if you're picking a game for Tsimikas, it's not Leicester. And you know, if Klopp sat here right now, he might argue that, well, I'm justified because Leicester might have been the more winnable game.
I'd have put him in for Leicester rather than last night, to be honest, because I felt like Klopp knew what they were going to get last night. He spoke after the game about them creating chaos and them basically, especially from set pieces, fouling five or six times because there's so much chaos going on, you can't sort of pinpoint what's happening. And I felt like last night they maybe saw Tsimikas starting, knew that they were going to target that area and just try to create so much going down that side when they had the ball quick on the counter-attack. And Tsimikas was pushing so high forward and he doesn't have the pace that Robertson does to track back as quickly and sort of cover the area. And then you have Oxlade-Chamberlain on that left-hand side as well. And I don't know what you guys think, but I felt like they were just in each other's space so much, whereas Robertson and Oxlade-Chamberlain sort of, they managed to work out in the past match where they weren't overlapping each other so much, but Oxlade-Chamberlain and Tsimikas were occupying the same space. They were literally talking to each other during the match and Tsimikas was like, go there, but they didn't know where each other were going to be and it just left us so susceptible on that left-hand side. And then on top of that, Brentford were just really, really good at creating overlaps. And I think you have to give them credit in that respect. They were putting sort of four people up there in between our two centre-backs and then another one in between the full-backs. And that meant that Tsimikas wasn't sure whether to sort of stay with the man, stay in the space, track back, track forward. And he just looked a little bit lost. But that also applies to both the centre-backs as well, to be honest. Sports Social Podcast Network.